days passed, and now so many years have gone by, it seems as though another lifetime, I was a stockbroker. I wasn't a priest, I was a stockbroker, and that was quite a grueling experience. I managed to bang on for about 7 years before I was able to escape that and do penance for that in seminary. But nonetheless, it was a long, long time ago. And I learned a lot about myself. I learned that I didn't want to be a stockbroker, for sure. But I also learned a lot about life, as a matter of fact. A young man in business and trying to make a living. One of the most formidable and certainly influential men in my early life was my sales manager, a man named Billy Clay. I can still see Billy. Billy was a big, raw-boned redneck. And I'm saying that very generously. That's how he described himself. He was an all-star, strong safety for the Ole Miss Rebels, and then went on to play for the Redskins. Redskins, yeah. He played strong safety for the Redskins back in the 1960s and early 70s, and then went on to a very profitable career in the investment industry. And I still remember when he told me that sales isn't difficult. It's hard, but it's not difficult. You go out, you find somebody that needs what you're selling, and you don't turn them loose until they buy what you got to sell. It's not really much more complicated than that. Sales isn't hard, but it's difficult. So often, Christians think about their own faith in similar ways. They're good about going to church on Sunday. Perhaps they even add a Bible study or two. And if you listen to Father Eaton and me, maybe you're saying morning and evening prayer if you're really, really good. But when put on the spot about what Christianity is about, you get that sweaty feeling on your palms and maybe you start shifting your feet a little bit and then you say something like, well, you know, I'm not an authority on these kinds of things. You should go talk to the priest. Right, to go push that off on some kind of professional, religious professional. But Paul, excuse me, I hear it, I'm already messing up here. But John's letter that we heard breaks it down to us as simply as it possibly could be. Christianity is simple. Hear it again, verse 23. And this is God's commandment that we should believe in the name of His Son, Jesus the Messiah, and love one another just as He has commanded us. That's it. It's the shortest homily you ever heard. Right there. If you could get that, you'd be swift. This is the only commandment. To love the Son, to believe and love in the Son whom He has sent, the Messiah, Jesus, and to love your brother and sister as He has commanded us. That's the only commandment. But as that great American, Billy Clay, said about sales, it's not difficult, but it's hard. It's hard. Whole lifetime can be given to plumb the depths of those two things. To believe that Jesus is God's Son and Israel's Messiah, the King over the whole wide world, of the heavens and the earth, of all languages and tongues, all peoples and nations now must serve Him. That is who He is. And then, as a result of that, that we love and serve our neighbors, even as we have been loved and served in the dying and rising Jesus. That's the Christian life. That's all there is to it. Now, of course, if you have questions, I know that Father Eden and I would love to answer those questions. We have a retired bishop here that would love to talk to you about some of the more thorny questions. But whenever Christianity has made a mistake, and we have, over the years, it's either one of those two problems. We have forgotten that Jesus is God's Son. We have forgotten that He is the King of the world. Or we have forgotten to love our neighbors, our Christian brothers and sisters, as Jesus loved us. Once again, living out of those two principles, that's hard. But the thing itself is simple. That's all that God asks us to do. John, in his gospel, says that no one has ever seen the Father. The only way that we know the Father is through the Son. He has made him known. That is exactly what Jesus, why it's absolutely imperative that we believe in the Son. You might say, well, you know, that whole Jesus business, God becoming a human being, that doesn't make any sense to me. I'm really kind of a monotheist. I believe in kind of the big idea of God up there. Well, I'm willing to admit that most human beings in the history of the world, through time and across all continents and civilizations, have believed that there were deities, or perhaps even a deity. Believing in a God is nothing unique to Christianity. But those gods, if you think carefully, those gods were dangerous gods. Those gods were imperial and arbitrary gods. Those were gods that demanded blood of their servants and worshipers. They were the ones who lorded over their people. Christianity is the only religion that has ever thought to say that God in his essence is love. We're the only one. Anybody else that tries to import that idea is simply cheating. They're stealing. They like the idea that Christianity proposes, but they're not willing to admit all that Christianity claims. How do we know that God is love? John tells us in our lesson today, we know he is love for two reasons. One, because he sent his son to die for us. That's the fullest expression of who God is. The Son comes to us in all of our sadness and brokenness and dies for us. And the second way that we know that God is love is because, surprise, surprise, we look at our hearts and we realize that we have love for people that should, by all accounts, gross us out, make us mad, really tick us off. But John says, this is the way that we know that we have love of the Father and the Son, because we love the brethren, our brother, Christian brothers and sisters, and yes, even our enemies. That is a unique and absolutely groundbreaking, earth-shattering situation that we find ourselves in if we have the Spirit of God within us. The Son makes the Father known. And how is the Father to be known? He is love. But it's not simply that we love God and worship the true God, but we also are transformed by that love, and that we love our Christian brothers and sisters. The love of God, the true love of the true God, demands that we change. Demands that we change. Notice how this great parable in the Gospel according to Luke is about a king who calls his servants, his subjects, to come to the great wedding feast, and they refuse. They've all got really, really good excuses, as a matter of fact. I don't have time in this homily to talk about where these excuses come from, but you just take my word for it. They all come from the Old Testament. Those are all acceptable reasons for why a man might not go to war. These three reasons that Jesus uses in his parable. So, as it stands, these are all pretty good reasons not to respond to the invitation. But they're not good enough. The king wants his subjects to come and be with him and to enjoy the party that he's throwing. Jesus is telling his audience that God now is throwing the ultimate party. And Jesus is the one who's come to announce that party. But another comment is that Jesus' audience is refusing the invitation. They are the ones in the story. Jesus is inviting them and us to put ourselves in the story. We always are in a situation to choose between God and something else. We always do. It's the most incredible thing that God is the most ultimate being, the most beautiful, the most powerful, the most loving, the most everything. You just fill in the blank. He's the most. And yet, we're constantly in our lives presented with other things. Go fishing. Reading a book. Working in the leisure. All of these great things. Are they the greatest? Jesus is asking his audience to ask that question of themselves. And we should too. Once again, the lesson is simply this. Believe in Jesus, in God's sin, to love your neighbors as yourselves. When I am invited to come into the party that God is throwing, I'm not simply being asked to say, well, you know, I like God better than these other things. What I'm being invited to do is enter into the very life of God. And when I enter into the very life of God, now I'm able to reach out and share that love of God with other people, my Christian brothers and sisters, and yes, especially my enemies. It changes who I am. And so, we are encouraged through the very first Sundays in Trinity to check exactly where our loves lie. John wants us to think deeply about how it is that God's love has been made known to us in Jesus, and now how it is that we are living that love out among our Christian brothers and sisters. Ask yourself, is that the thing that I love the most? Or am I tempted to love myself more? This is a great lesson on Father's Day. I'm not quite sure about who made up Father's Day. I'm a little suspicious. But nonetheless, fathers usually aren't the most exciting people in the house. Mothers are. The mothers are the most interesting people. They make life in the family alive. When dad's home with my kid, let me go play a video game. When moms are home, come and sit down. That glass I see. Chit chat. Moms make a house love. Dad is just over there in the easy chair in the corner. But what I want to say to the fathers here is consider how it is that we have a special role in our families and especially to our children. We are to be the ones who love them and sacrifice. We are to be Jesus to our children. Nothing else about God that you want to teach them are they going to believe if you haven't got that part figured out. If you can't serve and sacrifice for them, your children, and in doing so, be their father, then they're really going to have some questions about what it means to love a father whom they have never seen. And so, today, fathers, I toast you. Good day. Happy Father's Day. But remember that all of our fatherhood, all of the virtues of being the leader of a Christian family, only are pale shadows of the Father above who has sent his Son.